Are you a questioner, a wanderer, or even a bit of a snooper? If so, then you'll feel right at home in Knoxville. We've got miles of trails to wander in our urban wilderness, award-winning eateries to satisfy your culinary cravings, cultural sites to open your mind, and dog-friendly activities that'll have everyone wagging. Knoxville, calling the curious. Learn more at visitknoxville.com.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
First, it was Robert Saleh after five games. Now, Joe Douglas has been shown the door by Woody Johnson. Six games later, welcome into the Flight Plan Podcast, Tim McMaster, along with Zach Rosenblatt, our Jets reporter at The Athletic. And beyond all of that, Zach, along with Diana Rossini, published a story last night in The Athletic that goes much deeper into the dysfunction of the Jets, where all of Woody's fingerprints are and the domino effect of his decisions and negative consequences. And it's just messy. We're going to get into that. We'll talk about the Joe Douglas tenure overall, the era, the positive things he did, the negatives. Obviously, the wins never came. A lot to get to on this episode of Flight Plan. Zach, record for Joe Douglas, 30-64, five plus seasons. No playoff appearances. Those are the big numbers. That's what led to all this. But your story goes so much deeper. We'll start with the head. I think there's some more interesting parts to this story than the Aaron Rodgers part. But that's the part that's getting a lot of run. So let's start there. Woody wanted to bench Aaron Rodgers. After week four, after the loss to the Broncos. Actually, they had moved the ball and looked good the two previous weeks, right? Yep. And then they lose 10-9 to the Broncos. He has a meeting. Joe Douglas is in there. Robert Saleh, all the coordinators. And he says he wants to bench Rodgers. They talk him out of it. But it just seems like the tone was set at that point.
Yeah. So before I even get into that, I just want to start off by saying, like, I don't write our headlines, and I'm not like trying to throw my editor under the bus or anything, but like, so I think a lot of people have been attached to the headline and in the sense that like feeling like this was just a, you know, defense of Joe Douglas thing. That was not the intent writing it. And I realize, like, you look at that headline and that's what it looks like. Joe Douglas deserved to be fired. You don't get 6 years. Like, I obviously, like I'm not an idiot. Like, you do not get 6 years without making the playoffs, without sniffing the playoffs, and get through that. And he's made some really bad mistakes over the years. We're going to get into all that later, obviously. And he's made some really good moves. I don't think he's a terrible GM. I don't think he's a great GM. He's somewhere in the middle, probably average. And so ultimately, the goal of this story was to like paint the picture of what he was dealing with, especially over the last year and a half, which is when Woody got more involved. So I just wanted to put that out there to start out, because the headline does not necessarily reflect, I don't think, the story or our intent behind the story. But anyway, so to the Rodgers thing. Yeah, so they go through those first four games. They lose to the Broncos 10-9. The offense looks terrible. Woody calls this meeting. It's Woody. It's Christopher Johnson. It's Joe Douglas. Jaime, the president. Ira, who's Woody's, Ira Axelrod, who's his advisor. Robert Saleh, Joe Douglas. Nathaniel Hackett. Jeff Ulbrich, Brant Boyer were called in to like kind of defend their units from that day. Woody wanted them to defend themselves. And at some point over the course of that conversation, Woody says or floats the idea of benching Aaron Rodgers, and everybody kind of talks him down. At one point, one of the coaches in that room kind of was like, wait, was he being serious there? And like the people in the room thought he was being serious. So anyway, so that happened there. And, you know, and I realize, based on that and things that happened after, that seems unreal or unrealistic that would have happened. But I think people need to understand the person we're talking about here. Like, Woody Johnson you know, Bill Belichick, not to quote him, but because he obviously just trolls the Jets and Woody, but like his quote, Woody is ready, fire, aim. That is how they operate. He makes decisions in the moment. I've been saying this, you know, I had to do a couple radio shows. He operates more about, like, his focus is more on results than process is how I would describe Woody Johnson. So, you know, if the results aren't there, it's not about like, all right, let's get the process right. Let's get to the point where we can have sustained success. It's why isn't this happening right now? Why is Aaron Rodgers playing poorly? Why is Robert Saleh not getting the defense to, you know, consistently stop guy, whatever it is. And so that's kind of where that's rooted. And in that moment, he was like, well, are we better off with Tyrod Taylor? That's the question he asked. So that's where that started. And so then when you get to, you know, things like the Devontae Adams trade, him pushing through that, you know, it's not as if Joe is like fighting him on Devontae Adams. Like, he's a great player. But I think Woody like pushed that through to the point where he's like, go and get him. And like, so people are like, yeah, well, so if he wanted to bench Aaron Rodgers, why would he want to go and trade for his friend a few weeks later? Well, Aaron Rodgers played a little better a couple weeks later. And when he fired Robert Saleh a week later, which he decided in that moment, he hadn't decided that until, you know, after the Vikings game. He thought the team needed a spark, so they promoted Jeff Ulbrich, and he thought they needed a spark, so they traded for Devontae Adams. So he thought they had the pieces in place to do it. And so like, as things progress throughout the season, like, he's making certain decisions in the moment, and it's an in the moment thing. It's not a full breadth of the situation. And so, you know, all the questions about like, okay, so what, it doesn't make any sense. Why would he do this at 2-2? Well, you're looking at an owner of a team that hasn't been to the playoffs in what will be 14 years after the season. And he wants to get there desperately. This was an all in season and it has failed miserably. So like that's, if you're looking for logic in these moves, I would recommend you not doing that.
Yeah. All right. But let's go further back, which is what your story gets into, because we knew, right, the last time Joe Douglas spoke, it was pretty clear that, like, he would kind of checked out. Like, that was the vibe. I mean, I don't think we said that on the pod, but you said how kind of down he seemed. And he had the weird quote about, like, serving the ownership. And, like, it was pretty clear. But this goes back, not to then, not to week four after Aaron Rodgers, but way back into the offseason. So let's go back there. They wanted to offer Bryce Huff an extension, according to your reporting. Joe Douglas wanted to do that. Woody vetoed it. This brings up so many things because, like, A, everyone loves Bryce Huff around here, right? Like, yep. But, and if you do extend, and who knows if he would have taken the deal, but if you do extend Bryce Huff, you probably don't go after Hassan Reddick. There's like the domino effect is kind of crazy, but that's how far we're talking, right? Like, way back into the off season, Woody was really starting to dig in as far as being active as an owner.
And so with the Bryce Huff thing, like, it wasn't even a specific Bryce Huff thing. It was more Woody saying, we're not paying any new money to the players on our team until the end of the season. Like, the Jets were already pretty much, I believe it was after the Bills game late in the season when they got killed is when Joe Douglas had the offer. I think I forgot. I don't think that detail's in the story, but, and you know, I think Joe wanted to extend Thomas Morsett and Greg Zuerlein, if I remember correctly as well. So I think it was more abroad, like, we're not spending any money. Like, this team's not making the playoffs. We can look to next year kind of thing. So there was no signing guy.
Signing Bryce Huff is looking to next year.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was more like we're waiting until next year to deal with next year kind of thing is how I'd phrase it. And Bryce Huff's contract, it would have been cheaper at that time than what he signed with the Eagles. Probably more in line with what Hassan Reddick was making on his contract for the 1 year. But yeah, to your point, and again, it kind of was, again, people are conflating, like, if he wasn't willing to pay Bryce Huff at the time, then why was he willing to trade for Hassan Reddick? Well, again, it was two different timelines, and it's in the moment. So, you know, and Hassan Reddick's a shiny object, frankly, like, he's an all pro guy, but, you know, as part of the Hassan Reddick thing, and not to keep jumping around too much, but, like, you know, Hassan Reddick, before they traded for him, and this kind of speaks to, like, this idea that this was all just a puff piece for Joe Douglas. Like, Joe Douglas was warned by Hassan Reddick's people before the trade. Like, if you guys aren't going to pay him, if you don't think you're going to pay him, then I would wait. But Joe Douglas saw the the value that he was getting for this great player, traded for him knowing that Woody wouldn't be willing to pay him, at least right away. The whole idea that the Jets presented to Hassan was like, come and prove that you deserve the money, come out and play well at the start of the season, and then Woody will be willing to pay you. But Hassan did not like that idea. He wanted to get paid. And so, you know, this kind of goes into, why'd you make that trade in the first place? Why'd you trade away JFM? I think, you know, we talked about in the last pod when we were pretty critical of Joe. Like, by the way, like, I've been very critical of Joe Douglas on this podcast. And I've written criticism about him. Like, he destroyed that defensive line. Like, there's a lot of things he messed up. Trading away JFM was the worst thing I think they did this offseason, frankly. But anyway, not to get too sidetracked, but the Bryce Huff, you know, that happening during the season. I remember hearing it at the time and then just getting more details as time has passed on. Like, look, Bryce Huff has not aged particularly well in Philly. I don't know that they were using him well. And the Jets, he was perfect for their system. So I still think he would have been a quality player, but he's probably ultimately just a pass rush specialist, which is kind of what you have in Will McDonald now anyway. So, you know, you could argue like losing, not signing Bryce wasn't as big of a deal as trading away JFM ultimately, but like in the moment, Bryce Huff is a young player, ascending player in theory, you know, in his prime, sign him before it gets expensive. And that's not something the Jets generally have done. They did a better job of that with Michael Carter this offseason, but it was in the offseason, not during the season. And that's, you know, I think Woody generally doesn't love doing these deals during the season because he wants to see product. He wants to see performance and he wants to see results. And so you sign Michael Carter before the season and you get ahead of his free agency and all that stuff. And I'm curious to see how they handle the Sauce, Garrett, all that stuff in the offseason. But that's obviously a conversation for the next GM.
Another thing about the in the moment, which you keep, you know, keep bringing up, is the next thing I wanted to get to, which was Joe Douglas wanted to pursue Jerry Jeudy in a trade. Yep. That was nixed by Woody. But then Woody was part of the push to sign Mike Williams.
Yes. So here's how. Time. Yeah. Again. Well, so I guess the Jeudy thing, like Jeudy also turned around and signed like a huge contract with the Browns.
Right.
So that was likely a factor. The Jets did not really give out contracts that went beyond this year for the most part. They signed John Simpson actually to a multi-year deal, which looks like a really, really good deal in retrospect. And the next GM can thank Joe Douglas for that because he looks like a stud. But, you know, you get to free agency. The first wave of free agency passes. Tyron Smith and Mike Williams are still around. Jets fans and media are all saying that, like, if these guys linger, like, and the deal is right, you should go and get them. And, you know, I think it's not to say Joe like didn't want Tyron Smith necessarily. I just think the priority going into this offseason, both from Saleh and Douglas, from what I understand, was like, we don't want to keep making the same mistakes we have, which is signing aging players or signing guys coming off injuries, which a lot of times is the ones that are available in free agency. And Tyron Smith and Mike Williams hit the, you know, the all of that, all those points. Mike Williams wasn't old necessarily, though he's 30, I believe, but coming off a torn ACL, I think there was less support for that one than the Tyron Smith one in the building. But, you know, he came to the building. The Jets gave him an offer he couldn't refuse, and he never left the building. He could have went to Pittsburgh, which he wound up going to anyway. That didn't work out, obviously. And then Tyron Smith, you know, the Jets gave him an offer they didn't expect him to accept. We said that all offseason. $6.5 million is a lot of incentives to get to 20 if he played a lot. No other teams offered him anything, so he accepted it. And I don't think Joe Douglas expected that. So you're all of a sudden, they did draft Olufashinu, which has worked out, I think you could argue. But I think these were just signings that, like, these aren't the ones you want to necessarily, like, they were in win now mode, so you get it in theory, but you took really big swings on guys where if it didn't work, it wasn't going to work profoundly. And Tyron Smith leads this team in sacks allowed, and he has a neck injury now. So those didn't work out. And again, it goes to, you know, this is something Diane and I reported in January. Woody listening to social media is not a new thing. Like, he listens to it. He would bring, you know, things from social media or articles to Robert Saleh, to Joe Douglas, and be like, why aren't we doing this? Why don't we do this? Like, that happens. So the big names of free agency, like the Jets have always, the joke is they're the offseason champions. They always have been. And that kind of goes into it. They win the headlines in March and it doesn't win games in September.
All right. One more thing from the story that just goes into the position JD was in. And again, we're not defending JD and saying he shouldn't have been fired. He, well, 30 and 64 is all yes, we really need absolutely. To know is his yeah. record, and he didn't get it done. And we'll get into the other failures. But Rex Hogan was fired. Rex Hogan and Joe Douglas, very close. I guess according to their families are close. Like,
yeah,
they're tight. Fired in January. And you had a source who said that JD said, Woody should just fire me now. And then another source basically saying like that the team was kind of holding JD hostage because he didn't really have any control anymore.
Yeah, it was kind of, he was kind of like a dead, I mean, you saw it in basically his press conferences since the end of last season. I mean, if you look at, I don't know if everybody remembers, but in January at his season ending press conference, he's getting grilled because they, you know, they failed to make the playoffs again, and people were questioning some of their moves or non-moves. And I asked towards the end of the press conference, like, why do you believe Robert Saleh is the coach to lead this team? And he's like, I believe he's a coach because he's the coach. Like, he didn't have a good answer. And you see him at the combine, owners meetings. Like, he's just not, he does not seem like himself, frankly. Like, he's very, he was never a big talker anyway. Like, there was never a lot you could glean from his press conferences, to his credit or detriment, but it got like less and less. And then it culminates in this, the press conference, his last one, where, you know, he was, as we talked about on here, and he said, I work at the pleasure of the owner and all that stuff. And it was just so clear that he was kind of walking the plank for a while. And I think the Rex Hogan thing wasn't the first moment where that became clear, but it was definitely like, that was an emotional thing for him because he had to tell Rex Hogan he was fired, and they are very close. And I know, I don't look like ultimately, the Jets probably needed to make some changes based on the fact how bad things were. But the fact that they fired him, Chad Alexander leaves for the Chargers to take a promotion where he could have technically gotten that with the Jets. Those two guys leave, and Joe Douglas is not permitted to replace either of them. Like, both of those jobs remain open. It's why Phil Savage, who is basically a personnel consultant, is the interim GM with Joe Douglas fired, because they didn't replace these guys. So it was kind of like, Joe is getting all these people he's close with leaving or booted from the building, and a lot of his power is being stripped. And so he's kind of a shell of himself and a hostage, to quote the source.
And it just feels like at that point, just, you know, you should just, right? If you're taking the power away from the GM, just take away the GM. Just, yeah. I mean, I guess it's almost like he's somebody to take the bullets, right?
Yeah.
If Woody's like demanding these,
and somebody has to like actually do the day to day operations, right, of the GM. Right.
Yes.
But yeah, you know, I just, you know, and this goes to something I'd heard since I started covering this team, was that like Saleh and Joe were under the impression when they were hired, because Woody, if you remember, he was overseas at the time. Yeah. He came back right when Saleh was starting, but they were under the impression when he got back, he would not be as involved day to day. And I think they quickly figured out that was not the case. And so, you know, and as the story goes with Joe, like, I don't think he was like all in on taking this job initially. I believe Adam Gase like drove to his house in South Jersey to convince him to take the job, because they had a past relationship. So, and then he got a 6-year contract and he got to live out all six. Like, look, the problem I had with the headline that I had is that like, he was always, I forget what the headline even said, but I know like why Joe Douglas never had a shot or whatever it was. Like, he got 6 years. Like, that's longer than a lot do, especially when you have a failed draft pick like Zach Wilson. So, but yeah, ultimately, you know, this didn't turn into what he thought it would be in terms of like his free will to operate as, you know, the best GMs are led by owners who let them do their thing. They might step in every now and then, but they let the GMs run the business. And that is not what happens here.
I remember when Joe Douglas, we started doing this podcast with Can't Wait with Connor, yeah, and Marissa, you know, 2019. So like Joe Douglas was the beginning.
Yeah.
And I remember Connor saying that he had heard from numerous people around the league that they couldn't believe the Jets had gotten Joe Douglas. Because he was like, right, yeah, he was like
he was the top candidate,
star candidate coming up to take, yep, the
next. So was Saleh, by the way, yeah.
Yeah. And they couldn't, couldn't believe that he had chosen the Jets. And like, there was just all this positive energy, right? Yeah. He was going to, at that point, it was Sam Darnold, and he was going to fix the offensive line and protect, told Darnold's parents he was going to protect them and all this stuff. And it just never got there. So I think we can transition now into just like wrapping up his tenure with the Jets. We're going to do failures. We're going to do successes and kind of sum it up. Let's start with the failures, because at the end of the day, it was a failure. Again, to go back to that record, 30-64. I'll break down into the big ones. You mentioned it. The biggest one, right, has to be Zach Wilson. Because when you're a GM and you have a top two pick and you need a quarterback desperately, you can't miss that. Like, that's the one you can't miss. And it's really probably remarkable that he got the opportunity to trade for Aaron Rodgers, because a lot of cases you whiff on that pick and that's it. You know, you're out.
Totally.
And that was a big whiff. I mean, Sam Darnold, I would say, was less of a whiff at this point, just because there was nothing around him. And now you're seeing the, like, all right, he's a competent quarterback with the Minnesota Vikings, right? But like, there's no evidence that that's going to be Zach down the road.
Yeah. You know,
they missed Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah. But I mean, it wasn't a great quarterback class ultimately, but like that's not an excuse. Like, you picked, they could have stuck with Sam, traded back. Like, that was out there.
Yeah.
Like,
there was a lot of the package. A lot of fans didn't think.
I mean, look at the package the 49ers got for Trey Lance. So, like that year. So, you know, that's the big one. Like, people, I mean, coaches certainly, but GMs also, like, coaches survive it even less. I remember doing research on this last year. It's pretty rare to survive like a bust of that magnitude and that high of a draft pick. And if you look at it, like, two things saved him from that, like, costing him his job. And that's the 2022 draft class. And that's trading for Aaron Rodgers. Because if they don't trade for Aaron Rodgers and the Jets missed the playoffs last year, they're gone. But Aaron Rodgers gets hurt, saves them another year. And the fact that you have Aaron Rodgers is, like, you know, your selling point to Woody Johnson. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, you know, if they don't bungle that Zach Wilson pick, they never need to get Aaron Rodgers. They never need to go try and get Derek Carr. Like, they don't need to be on the quarterback market last year. And so that, like, changed the course of everything, because, you know, 2022, when they started 6-3, the pod was at its best at that time, I would say, when we were on Can't Wait, you know? And, you know, it felt like everything was in front of this franchise. Like, they're 6-3. They have all this fun young talent. It's a fun team. They get Mike White in there. Everybody's rallying around him. Like, they have some pieces. Offensive line's a little bit of a mess, but you have Garrett Wilson. You have Breece Hall. That defense is looking way better than anybody expected. 6-3, they lose most of the rest of their games, but you still go into the offseason feeling pretty good. But Zach Wilson is the part of it that you don't feel good about. They were kind of winning in spite of him. Mike White comes in. You see what they can do with a Mike LaFleur offense with somebody not named Zach Wilson. It looks pretty good. And, you know, then the offseason, Woody, again, this wasn't in the story, but Woody forces Sala to fire Mike LaFleur, which I think has been out there. He forces him to fire him. And that pretty clearly was also a big mistake in retrospect, because I think he's a pretty capable offensive coordinator ultimately. And he had his flaws and he absolutely made mistakes. And I think, you know, he wasn't.
But he was a first time play caller too.
First time play caller. He was young.
Mistakes.
He's learning on the job a little bit, but the offense was at its best with Mike White at quarterback. Like, that's, if you look at the numbers, like, that's a stone cold fact. So anyway, that feels like a lifetime ago. And Zach Wilson was the missing piece there. If they have even an average quarterback that year or last year that's not named Zach Wilson, then they're a playoff team probably. I mean, 7 wins both years when they had no business winning 7 games, even, especially last year, like, says everything. Like, if they get an even okay quarterback, even Tyrod Taylor, you know, he has flaws, but, you know, if you have Tyrod Taylor when Aaron Rodgers goes down, or if you have Tyrod Taylor when you're benching Zach Wilson, like, I don't know. I feel like they're a little more competitive. So, you know, Zach Wilson's the biggest bust that they had. Mekhi Becton, really bad pick the year before that. Some people give him a pass because of the COVID year and all that stuff, but those two draft classes in total, not very many players that are still around that you feel good about. I think Michael Carter II was in 2021, late round pick, deserve credit for that. Jamie and Sherwood, like, a couple really, like, solid late round guys, but, like, the main picks were all pretty disastrous ultimately.
I think you just kind of went through all like that, just kind of flowed as far as like the failures, right? Because I had written down like Wilson, Becton, who we just got into, and the Rogers trade, which went bad for him. So focusing in on the drafts, though, and first picks, right? The first round picks are the key. And it's a complete mixed bag. Yeah. Because 2020 is Becton, 2021 is Wilson. Not looking good.
Yeah.
But 2022, as you mentioned, saves everything with that class. Sauce.
Truly an unprecedented class if you look at it now. Like, it's just wild.
Yeah, Jermaine Johnson. I mean, just an incredible.
And everybody's favorite defensive lineman, Michael Clemens, in the fourth round as well.
Yeah, then there's that. But like a guy who's playing, right? Like,
yeah, for sure. And Max Mitchell,
that
entire
draft class is guys that have contributed in some way. It's incredible. So that's like the bad 2021, the great 2020 and 2021, the great 2022. And then the last 2 years have been, well, we'll see, like Will McDonald. There's a lot of question marks about like, would they be better off with somebody else? But like Will McDonald off to a great start to begin this year, all the sacks, like seems like he's going to be a contributing piece, although maybe not the piece they needed. And then Olu seems like, if Olu had been the guy right in 2020 instead of Becton, if they had maybe gone with the safer, like left tackle instead of the like behemoth guy, like freak of nature, maybe they'd be better off. But like, so as far as the draft goes, I think it all probably pans out to being like average, right? Like he had the great class, but then there was a lot of ugh.
I mean, most GMs don't go their whole career getting a class like he did in 2022, frankly.
Yeah.
Four good players and then a couple like rotational backup guys. Like, and if you can't want to count Tony Adams as an undrafted guy that year too, like that's, you know, pretty hard to match. But yeah, he's had a lot of misses too. Like it definitely, I think he did a decent job in some of the middle round, like later round stuff, finding like contributors. You know, Huff undrafted. He's been good on undrafted, good on the waiver wire, JFM, Quincy Williams. But, you know, I think that even you look at this year's class, the Malachi Corley pick doesn't look amazing. I mean, it's too early to, I'm never going to like say a guy's toast after 1 year, but it doesn't look like they had a plan for him or that he wasn't ready. And they celebrated that pick as if they got like the next coming of like, you know, Deebo Samuel or whatever. And it has not really panned out that way. So, you know, I think a lot of people have resurfaced the clip of Joe celebrating when the Colts picked A.D. Mitchell, Adonai Mitchell from Texas, because I think he's played decently for the Colts this year. They celebrated him picking him because they knew they were going to get Malachi. So, yeah, you know, a lot of, you know, I would say if you're looking at it in terms of baseball terms, he had a pretty good batting average, but over the course of like, and if you compare him to like Maccagnan, it was good. But overall, you know, yeah, I think his draft pedigree left something to be desired. Like you shouldn't remove a class, but if you remove 2022 and that's how you evaluate it, it doesn't look very good. So it's all banking on that one really, really good class, I would say.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, you think of like the Dallas Cowboys, right? And the one class that like spurred them into like a dynasty back in the way, way, way back Jimmy Johnson days. All right. Player scouting is another thing where like you kind of mentioned it there, but like we mentioned Bryce Huff, you said Quincy Williams, John Franklin Myers, DJ Reed, right? Yeah. Like low cost free agent cornerback becomes one of the best in the league. Like he did have a decent, pretty good track record as far as player scouting, which was one of his strengths, right? Coming in, like that was his experience in his time in Baltimore and his other with the Eagles. And that played out pretty well. I think, that he has a pretty good eye for talent other than maybe quarterbacks.
Yeah, for sure. Like there's a lot of positive negatives you can look at. If you just look at free agents or waiver claims, you know, there's Quentin Jefferson under the radar one, John Simpson under the radar success. I think Jordan Whitehead, I think in retrospect, has aged better because their safeties have been really bad these last couple of years, or this last year. I mean, I'm trying to think of some other one. Morgan Moses, they let him go, but they brought him back. He looked pretty good. And then you have the flip side of that. I think he's done a really, and I think some of this goes to a lack of cohesion between GM and coaching staff, where they've signed guys or traded for guys like, you know, Mecole Hardman, I mean, Alan Lazard, I think he looked better this year, but didn't look like a great signing last year. Corey Davis wasn't a great signing. But yeah, a guy like Mecole Hardman was barely playing. Malachi Corley barely playing out of the draft. CJ Uzomah, bad signing. Dwayne Brown, bad signing. Ryan Khalil, like he definitely had his misses, especially on the O-line. But again, I think it comes out pretty even. And his bargain ones were pretty good. So yeah, again, it's like I agree with you. I think he's a good evaluator of talent. I think he'll probably be better suited in a number two role again, whether it's in Philly or the Chargers or wherever he goes next. Because I do think he is a good scout, even if some of the, like, a lot of the criticism of the team this year is that it feels like a bunch of talented players, but not a team. And so I think if you want to criticize him in terms of like the roster building, you can for sure.
You know, another good miss that we didn't bring up as far as like not a good fit for the offense, although it's proven to not really fit anywhere else. Denzel Mims.
Yeah. Mimsy.
We can't do this podcast without mentioning.
Also, Dalvin Cook, also not a good signing, but
oh yeah,
you know, that was like a flashy name. So you could probably guess probably a lot of the root of that. But yeah, so you know, again, very mixed bag, but and I get it, like the line that he was better than McCagnan and Nidzik, it's a low bar to clear and it's not good enough. But
his record, you know, wasn't though, right?
His like, record, his thing. Winning percentage was worse.
The roster is probably in better shape than when those guys left.
Exactly.
Definitely.
That's the point to make. Yeah. Like the GM inheriting this roster is in a much better spot than Joe was before him or Mike McCagnan was before him. Ultimately.
It's the old saying, right? Like leave a place better than when you arrived.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I don't know what the slogan is, but, all right. Looking ahead, right? Yeah. The reason they did this now, or one reason, is you can start the search. I assume that's one of the key things here. Get out in front of it. They are the first team, you know, that there's a GM and a coach vacancy. You can get out there, you can start looking. But I would imagine no GMs or coaches or potential people out there are going to make a decision about the Jets until they weigh all their other options, just knowing how this has all gone down, right? Like you can be first to like the sale, so to speak, but like if nobody's buying, like it's not like they're going to, because they're doing this now, going to be the first team to get a GM and coach, because I think if they, whoever they're really targeting, they're not going to be first on that person's list.
Yeah. No, more ultimately, I think a lot of this is a research stage. They're in the research stage. They're putting out feeler stage. There's GM candidates out there that aren't employed necessarily. So, you know, I have talked around the league a little bit since Joe was fired, and I did get some names, some of them a little interesting. I think there's some of the obvious ones that are getting floated around make a lot of sense. Ian Cunningham is the Bears assistant GM, has a similar background to Joe Douglas. So I don't know if that'll be held against him. He was in Baltimore and Philly, I believe. So both of those.
I mean, but those are two organizations.
Yeah, exactly. That you should, well run. Like, those are the ones you want to pluck from. Brandon Brown from the Giants, assistant GM of Joe Shane. Another from Howie Roseman's tree. You know, I think the big names, I have a hard time believing the biggest names will want to come here, like Mike Borgonzi from the Kansas City Chiefs is one who's always floated around. You know, some other names I heard. Ray Farmer, he's on the Rams staff. He was the Browns GM like 10 years ago. Thomas Dimitroff, I've heard, is somebody to keep an eye on. He was former Falcons GM. And an interesting one for me, Donna Ponte. She works for the league office right now, but she got her start with the Jets. It's for the first half of her career, she worked in the Jets organization. Maybe, I don't know if teams are ready to hire as like a GM. I think she would be good, but I've heard a lot of talk about like hiring a president of football operations type of thing to kind of like help, you know, whether it's be the go between Woody and the GM and the coach or whatever it is to kind of run things day to day. I would keep an eye on her. I think she's very interesting. There's some other names I've heard too, but those are some of the main ones that were floated to me the last couple of days. John Spytek from the Bucks, assistant GM, and Ray Agnew from the Lions is another big one. Like the Lions are an organization definitely worth plucking from right now,
which is wild. Like, yeah. whoever thought we'd live in a world where the Lions were the place to pluck people from. Interesting going the female route, like Kim Ng kind of broke that ceiling, right? Like with Major League Baseball, getting a GM job, a legitimate GM job. haven't had one in football. That would be really interesting to see if they went that route. I guess the good thing here is the last time around when they hired a GM, they had already hired, there was that mess, right? Where they like had the coach, didn't fire the GM, then fired the GM. Joe Douglas gets a late start, doesn't get the draft. Then he takes over the team. At least now they're in alignment where like you're going to hire a GM who's going to get to pick his head coach and full steam ahead with that lined up.
Not only that,
and hopefully Woody Johnson goes to England and they can do whatever they want.
Not only that, but I think this is the first time they're going to have a full clean sweep of head coach, GM, and quarterback. Like, I think they've had, like, it's pretty rare that a team goes, you go somewhere and all three of those are completely going to be new, because I think that's going to be the case here. Because, you know, if you look in the past, like, you know, whether it's Todd Bowles or Mike Maccagnan or Adam Gase or Joe Douglas or Robert Saleh, they all like inherited either the GM or the quarterback or the head coach. It was never like they were coming into like a clean slate. So you could view that as a positive or a negative, but I think it's at least interesting, because I do think the irony of Joe Douglas getting fired now, to me, is that, you know, he spent so much time trying to build this offensive line, failed for 5 years. I think the offensive line's pretty good in year six and he's gone. So he made it more appealing for a perspective, like, whether it's the offensive coach or whatever it is. So you have a solid O-line, you have Breece Hall, you have Garrett Wilson, TBD Devontae Adams. I'd try and bring him back if you can. I don't know if he'll want to. Like, that's a pretty good core on offense. And you have obviously some of the core, you're going to lose some guys on defense, but you still got Quincy, you still got Quinnen, you still got Sauce Gardner, Michael Carter II, Will McDonald, Jermaine Johnson coming back. Like, it's not barren. Like we said, it's being left in decent shape talent-wise. There's some cap issues to deal with and you have a lot of holes to fill, but it's a much better spot than usual, I would say, especially for a Jets team hiring new people.
And if that pick, depending on the pick, right, that's the other part of this. Like, if it's a top five pick, then you also, in theory, get to pick your quarterback to go forward with this. It's not the best class, but who knows? Yeah. By the time we get to the draft, it may be. Like, we may be like, oh, but wow, this class is great. Where did these guys all come
from? In theory,
from?
If you're giving a coach like a rookie quarterback, that gives them more time. And if you want to do the flips, if you want to do the flip side of like Woody's meddling or whatever, it's that Robert Saleh got a fourth year without ever sniffing the playoffs and Joe Douglas lasted six. Like, that's time, which most people don't have in this business. So
So that's the thing. Like, in a lot of, there are a lot of positives about this job.
Yeah.
But a meddling owner is a big negative. So, and just the vibes, right, of like the Jets job.
Yeah,
and like
bad vibes.
I think we're going to, unless something crazy happens, I think we're going to take next week off from the podcast. We'll come back after that. This episode was originally going to be a stay or go episode.
Yeah, we'll do that with Will through the roster. Maybe we do that next week or the week after. Yeah.
I guess the we know the answer to Joe Douglas, which maybe would have been on the list. Yeah. But, I think there's still plenty of time to do that, and we'll start talking about the draft and we'll get Dane on at some point. But what a wild season it's been, and we're only about halfway through. So we'll see how we go. But because we are off next week, happy Thanksgiving to everybody out there. Hope you enjoy
the best holiday.
There you go. Best food holiday. Exciting. I'm in New York, obviously. But most people that have listened to this podcast for a long time know, my family's not, my wife's family's not, but one of my nephews is in the marching band at the University of Massachusetts. They're in the Macy's Day Parade. My whole family's coming down
to
the city for Thanksgiving. We're gonna go to the parade.
And that's awesome.
Me and Mandy are hosting Thanksgiving. It's gonna be like 16 people.
Oh my God. And you're gonna be shuffling into like Times Square. That sounds like fun too.
Pray for us.
It'll be great. You're gonna crush it.
It should be a lot of fun. My fears are not enough food and not enough space.
If in case we don't do a Thanksgiving episode, I'm curious what your favorite Thanksgiving side or dishes. Sweet potato pudding was always my favorite growing up.
Sweet potato pudding.
It has the marshmallows on top.
Yes. That's in my top.
And my mom's recipe has like pineapple in it, and it's like so good.
One of my favorites.
I am making some stuff for my brother's Thanksgiving, and actually got it. I wonder if anybody's making that, because if not, I'm going to have to.
Somebody said, have enough wine on hand, Dan Botter. So good news there. My father is in his retirement, has become a huge wine.
Oh, really?
Person. Like, he took courses. He's like a cellar master. My parents don't even
drink.
Yeah, he has like a degree, like cellar master.
Wow.
So I just said, like, you're in charge. So he's bringing
That's
plenty
amazing.
Of wine. But as far as sides go, my favorite is my godmother actually makes this stuffing. And it's got sausage in it. So you take like Wonder Bread, right?
I'm not
like
a huge stuffing guy, but that sounds good.
No, yeah. This is neither am I, except that you take, it's like from scratch. You use Wonder Bread as the bread. Like, we're not talking like shake and bake or whatever. Wonder Bread, and then the sausage, and then, the spices and everything. And it just kind of like melts together into like, that's my favorite.
Sounds lovely.
When I lived in Pennsylvania, that's where she lives. So I used to go to her house for Thanksgiving. And like, finally, when I knew I was moving, like a long time ago, 15 years ago, I said like, hey, you need to give me the recipe because I can't come to your house anymore for Thanksgiving. So she did. And so now
that's great. Make that. Yep. So you're tasked. I'll say one more. My hot take is that
I'm also tasked with a turkey. So,
okay. I've never done that. My brother is the king of that. He does a great job with it. He has a smoker. I don't know if he's doing the smoker or if he's frying it or whatever, but it's always delicious. But, I think that pumpkin pie is overrated as a Thanksgiving
true,
pie. And I think apple pie should be that pie of choice on Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Cause it's apple. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So we are having an apple pie and a pumpkin pie. So
you got to give the pumpkin for the people who want it, but overrated.
Yeah, but apple pie with ice
cream. Pecan pie over the last few years has grown on me. I was never a pecan pie guy. It's quite delightful.
Taylor's point, I just put it on the screen. He said, hot take, most Thanksgiving food is terrible. Not true. Bad
take. Disagree.
Turkey is overrated.
Overrated, absolutely. For sure.
But if you just take a little turkey.
Nobody goes to a restaurant and orders turkey. That's how you know.
No, but you fill the plate with everything else.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So one more Thanksgiving question, Zach, before we say bye. Cranberry sauce, can or the real stuff?
The can. I mean, I grew up on the can. It's so good.
The cans. You got to go with the can.
Yeah, I go with the can.
I mean, fledged can.
I made it. The
home. Sound it makes when it slides out of the can.
And it like just like flails around.
Yeah.
Yeah, I made a homemade cranberry sauce one year and it was good, but it just hits different coming out of that can, something about it.
Yeah, I agree. All right. Any other takes?
I think that's all I got. I mean, fun to watch
sides
football.
I
will say, knock on wood, I've never had a cover a Thanksgiving game, but I probably just jinxed myself for next year. Although I don't know if they want to put the Jets on Thanksgiving. That'd be mean to all the families, but.
I mean, Jets. When was the last time the Jets played Thanksgiving?
Honestly, that's a good question. I don't know. That'd be something to research. There's probably somebody.
There's certain teams that just don't really, because now that there's more games, when it was just Cowboys and Lions, like you felt like there's certain teams that would just never get that match.
I enjoyed the Black Friday game last year. It would be, the Butt Fumble
game. Butt Fumble game, Taylor. Yeah, good call. Good pull.
But Black Friday was fun. I was hoping that would be like a yearly thing for the Jets, but guess not. They don't want any more Fail Marys.
All right. We've lingered. good stuff. Good showing by the fans tuning into this one. Breaking news always does well in the podcast. But thank you, everybody, for tuning in on the live stream. If you're checking us out later, thank you as well. Of course, if you need to find us, we are easier to find now on Apple, Spotify, wherever. Just search for Flight Plan. We have our own feed there. But we also love being part of Badlands. Those guys crushed it yesterday with the breaking news, of course. They were right in it afterwards. This will be up there as well. And enjoy next week. Unless something crazy happens, we'll talk to you on the other side of Thanksgiving. We'll talk to everybody later. Bye.
What defines Ohio? A place that dares to go first and never looks back. There's no slowing us down. In Ohio, we're powering America, discovering breakthroughs, driving the future, propelling tomorrow. At Jobs Ohio, our mission is clear. Strengthen job opportunities and empower Ohio's workforce. Ohio, our time is now. See Ohio's momentum at jobsohio.com/Ohio's time.
Are you a questioner, a wanderer, or even a bit of a snooper? If so, then you'll feel right at home in Knoxville. We've got miles of trails to wander in our urban wilderness, award-winning eateries to satisfy your culinary cravings, cultural sites to open your mind, and dog-friendly activities that'll have everyone wagging. Knoxville, calling the curious. Learn more at visitknoxville.com.
Hey, it's Cole Swindell, and when I spend 200 days a year rolling down the highway, the bus can start to feel smaller than a guitar case. Everyone wonders how I stay chill while the hours crawl by. Truth is, one good luck spent on Chumba, and suddenly the trip feels a whole lot shorter. Finding your space, even when there isn't much to spare. Need some chill? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus TNC supply. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.